Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. The 2004 Rocky Mountain Classic, the speech and debate tournament, it was won with a topic of rewriting history, which is really uncanny since Dick Morris just came out with his book, The Correction for Hillary Clinton's Living History. His is titled Rewriting History. He's not a fan of conservative Christians. But since he talks about what's wrong with Hillary, then we tend to tolerate Dick Morris. But what's interesting is the topic the winner of the 2004 Rocky Mountain Classic chose as her topic the same title, Rewriting History. And that's before Morris's book was out. So I think he stole Rachel Heflin's title. That's what I think. But I'd like to ask Rachel, it's an honor to have her in studio. Welcome to Bob Enyart Live. What is it like to compete against other homeschoolers?
Well, I have to tell you, it's absolutely wonderful because, as you know, homeschooling is really growing. But it's still rare to be able to meet these kind of people. And at these speech and debate tournaments, you all have the same ideas and you believe the same things. But it's absolutely wonderful to be able to be in the midst of these wonderful people.
That's so neat. Now, let me ask you this. That was like the diplomatic answer. But you keep winning at these events. So what is it like to beat these kids? You look at some kid and you think, you're going to have a bad night tonight because I might win.
Well, it's very honoring because they're all so very good. And everyone has such a wonderful Christian character. Mm-hmm. We're all very supportive of each other. I mean, we go in, we watch each other's speeches, we come out, we encourage each other, we give them some suggestions, we discuss things. It's absolutely wonderful. It's very honoring to beat them.
Oh, so that is neat. So that even if this is somebody who you might be competing against in another round or another region, you help each other out.
Yes, we definitely do.
All right.
Well,
now, Dick Morris's book, Rewriting History, I think his topic is a little different than yours.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Right? Do you mention Hillary about 492 times in your speech?
No, I'm afraid I don't.
You don't? Okay.
No, he beats me there.
Okay. Well, I was at this Rocky Mountain Classic event. In fact, I was one of the judges. And I didn't know during the contest – how many competitors were there?
There were about 74, I believe.
74.
Just in speech.
And just in speech, right. That doesn't count the debates. There's 100 and some in a whole event. I was one of the three judges in the room that you were one of the contestants. And I didn't actually know that you were related to the event organizer.
Well, yep, she's my mother.
That's right, Ann Heflin. And if I had known, it's a good thing I didn't. It might have biased me.
Well, I'm glad you didn't know then.
Yeah, that's right. So, Rachel, if you could, I've heard your talk, but we made an offer. I was so thrilled with the way the homeschoolers were able to compete that I went to the organizers and said, we would love it if the winner of today's event could come and give her speech, his speech, whoever wins, on the air. And so would you do us the honor of letting us hear Rewriting History?
Thank you very much, Mr. Enyart. I really appreciate this opportunity. In answer to a question on a history exam, one high schooler wrote, "The cause of the Revolutionary War is that the colonists sent parcels through the post without stamps. During the war, the Redcoats and Paul Revere threw balls over stone walls. Delegates from the 13 states formed the Contented Congress, while Benjamin Franklin invented electricity by rubbing cats backwards." It's kind of funny, isn't it? Until we think about the ignorance of history it displays. But I'd like to unmask something far more devastating than plain ignorance, something that is slowly and subtly invading the minds of young and old alike. It's the rewriting of our history. History is so much more than that subject we all studied in school. It's actually a map and compass for our decisions today. I'm sure that you've all heard, "He who ignores his history is doomed to repeat it." True, let me start by transforming this philosophical concept into an image that should help us as we study this topic. Imagine yourself today as captain of a ship in the middle of an ocean. You are consulting your map so you can choose safe voyage. But what happens if your map is wrong? You don't know where the previous captain found fresh water or where the ship ran aground. You can't benefit from his experiences, so you're unwittingly charting a perilous course. Do you see the analogy? Our history is this map, but revisionists are making it look like Swiss cheese. Nothing is sacred. But before we examine the motive and its impact on us, let's first take a quick look at some examples. Now, whenever you hear of the first Thanksgiving, you probably think of happy, hardworking people and, of course, lots of food. But according to Governor Bradford's diary, the first Thanksgiving was actually full of socialism and hunger. The Thanksgiving that we read about in our history books actually didn't occur until many years later, after the people started a free market system. Now, who knows who our first president was? Washington, perhaps? Actually, it was Peyton Randolph. He's kind of an important man, one that should be studied alongside Washington, Jefferson, and Franklin. That is, except in New Jersey. They've just declared that Washington, Jefferson, and Franklin are, quote, unnecessary in their history books. But everyone knows that it was Thomas Paine's book, Common Sense, that fueled our rebellion against England. Right? Did you know it actually wasn't written until 1776? In reality, our founding fathers largely credited Vindiciae Contra Tyrannos, a book written 200 years earlier. Was this just a math error? We'll actually take a look at that in just a few minutes. You know, America loves her heroes, but just like all of us, they weren't perfect. Did you know we had a president who shut 200 newspapers, imprisoned over 10,000 U.S. citizens, used federal troops to control a state legislature, chased a congressman out of the country, tried to arrest a Supreme Court justice who argued that this president was unconstitutional, and he wasn't even impeached? No, this isn't the latest episode of West Wing. It was actually Abraham Lincoln, one of our nation's most favorite heroes. Favorite heroes don't have to be perfect, and aren't. But it's wrong to ignore history that we all dislike. We all abhor the Holocaust. But it happened, though some historians are now arguing that it didn't. One-third of a California history book has been removed, and a completely Islamic account has been inserted. In an effort to be more politically correct, he and him is being changed to who and hum, new unisex terms that frankly sound like Dr. Seuss in our history books. And amazingly, there's been no effort to cover up what is perhaps the most frightening example, the Rewriting History Project. They are taking all wars out of our history books in order to prove to our young people that America is a nonviolent culture. From historical figures to minuscule word games, everything is a target. But why? The answer is a sad one, especially given our Christian roots. Our history has largely fallen prey to an anti-Christian sentiment. Revisionists change our founding fathers, hoping we'll forget that they too believed in the Bible. Remember common sense and the questionable math error? Common Sense is a secular book. Vindiciae Contra Tyrannos uses biblical arguments to justify separation from an overpowering government. But revisionists don't want to acknowledge our Christian roots. In New Hampshire, they now refuse to say pilgrim, claiming it's religious. And they've even removed stained glass windows from a historic church because the windows showed our founding fathers in prayer. History has significant implications for us today. Compromised truths of the past compromises future decisions. The Carnegie and Rockefeller foundations understood this. They wrote, "The only way to control the people was to control their education." But what part of our education did they want to control? The teaching of history. They actually implemented a plan for this in 1954. We also see this concept clearly expressed in George Orwell's books 1984 and Animal Farm. There, history is rewritten to control the people, and the government's favorite slogan says it all. He who controls the past controls the future. He who controls the present controls the past. The past impacts the future? Yes, it does. The question is it for good? History isn't always grand, but ignoring defeats doesn't turn them into successes. It prevents the possibility of learning. Remember our history student and his exam? He would probably freely admit his ignorance. Simple ignorance is like sailing without any map at all, which generally means the captain is cautious. But revisionists are wreaking far worse havoc on our voyage. They're giving us a map filled with inaccuracies. We're sailing forth in confidence in our map of Swiss cheese. If our map, our history is wrong, we can't benefit from the lessons learned by our previous captains. It's been said that those who are in rebellion against memory are those who wish to live without knowledge. In war, the victor rewrites the conquered nation's history to make them forget their true identity. Only today, we're not fighting against an enemy from without. Our history is being rewritten by an enemy from within. That's why we must fight to preserve an accurate map. Don't blindly accept history books and commonly held beliefs. Test them against prizes. There are an increasing number of Christian publishers now releasing these sources. With true knowledge of our history, we can fight against revisionist historians who, in Jedi fashion, have said, "You never knew that this ever happened." If there's still some doubt in your minds as to whether rewriting history actually affects today's decisions, recall the recent debates surrounding the removal of the Ten Commandments from the Alabama Supreme Courthouse. The cry was, "Separation of church and state." But James Madison's writings, primary documents, clearly show that the First Amendment never intended to eliminate God from government. But many of us still felt torn between loyalty to the Constitution and loyalty to God, when in fact, there was no dichotomy. Decisions are being made every day based on inaccurate history. I've written a poem on this topic, and I'd like to share it with you all now. I read the books in search of truth that I might find my American roots. But what is this? Little truth to see. They've slashed and burned my history. They've changed the pilgrims and Madison erased, made religion evil and the commandments base. Politically correct they have become. The anti-Christian epidemic has now begun. Our founding fathers stand there so tall and grand with an accurate map held in their hand. This is our past, and I hold it dear. Remember and treasure it for our future here. It guides, protects, and charts the way. Falsehoods and errors it doth slay. By God's grace, safe harbor, we will reach at last, because we remembered our truthful past. Stand here now and plead my case. Let not these men our past erase. Your children's children will sing praise to thee if you preserve their history. Winston Churchill once said, "The greatest advances in human civilization have come when we recovered what we had lost, when we learned the lessons of our history." That's why we can't just stand by and watch revisionists rewrite our past. We are, after all, the captains of today, and our future depends on charting the right course using the right map of our history. Thank you, Mr. Enyart.
Rachel Heflin, that was just extraordinary. Everybody in our studio audience is applauding. Except your mom. She's probably heard this a few times.
Yes. Yes. More than a few.
Has this speech become a part of you? You're using it to compete as you go through the regions? And
oh, yes. And I'm finding I'm even using it in daily conversation as I start to discuss this topic with other people.
That is so neat. Now, in a minute, I want to ask you I actually want to point out something that perhaps Christians are sometimes guilty of revisionist history. But before we get to that, I want to find out more about this competing. Mm-hmm. What is it? What is the competition like? There are local or regional tournaments around the country?
Well, actually what it is there's this one big organization called NCFCA, and there are tournaments organized across the nation under this general group.
Umbrella.
And there tend to be state tournaments, and then there can be closed, like ours was closed. Only people from
Colorado
can compete.
Okay.
And then there are open tournaments. You know, you can go to California and you can meet people from New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
It's really great. And at these different tournaments, very, very well, you can qualify to a national tournament.
Oh.
Yes.
And so you have qualified.
Yes, I have.
Right. And winning at the Rocky Mountain Classic, was that sufficient to qualify right there?
Yes, winning the original oratory category, which was what my speech was in, yes, that qualified me to the national tournament in this speech.
Okay. And the national tournament, when is that coming? I know people in the audience will want to pray for you that you do really well.
I'd really appreciate that. The tournament is actually going to be the first weekend in June. It's going to start on Wednesday and end on Saturday.
Okay. All right. So that's great. And then we'll find out. You'll report back to us?
I would be happy to.
Let us know, because you're our Colorado representative.
Well, actually, Colorado is going to have multiple representatives.
All right.
Original oratory was actually only one out of 10 categories.
Category.
Yes.
Right. That day that I was invited to be a judge, along with many others, because there were so many kids and so many competitions going on.
There were a lot.
And there were also debates going on, and team debate. And that's actually my favorite.
It's my favorite too.
I like debate.
Debate is great.
All right. And so then homeschooling in general, it seems we've talked about some years ago, a survey suggests that there were 1 million homeschool kids and growing quickly. So I haven't seen current figures, but it's obviously becoming increasingly popular.
It is. I mean, even in our speech and debate tournaments, these tournaments have really grown over the last 3 to 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
This year we had 74 people just competing in IE, and that's actually almost the same amount of people that competed in a regional tournament last year.
Oh, IE is?
Individual events.
Individual events.
Yes.
And yours was original oratory.
Yes.
Okay.
It was.
All right. This is pretty cool. Now, homeschooling, let me ask just real quickly, could you get a good education in homeschooling? You know, parents, maybe they don't know how kids.
Oh, I feel that I'm getting the best education possible from my mom.
Yeah.
And it's not even just my mom. I mean, my mom teaches me many things, and I guess you could call my dad the principal, but he's even taught me chemistry this year.
Oh,
he's
wow.
He's actually in medicine. And my grandpa teaches me history. He's a huge librarian. He's taught us Old Testament survey. And I feel like I'm getting a really wonderful education.
Yeah.
Plus the fact that it really strengthens, you know, the bonds within the family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's... I absolutely love it.
The our church, Denver Bible Church, it's a public school free zone where all the families at Denver Bible Church. Now, we're not a big church. We probably have on an average Sunday 70 to 80 people. But all the families either homeschool or I think we have one family sends their kids to Christian school. And because we tell people that your kids will get a much better education if you homeschool them.
Yes. Well, and you really get the one-on-one in homeschooling that you really won't get anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. But how about academically? What if we test homeschoolers on standardized tests compared to public school kids across the country?
Well, that's where I find it's really encouraging that homeschoolers are actually doing much better on these tests than other children are.
How could that be? It's true, isn't it?
It sure is.
Again, the last survey I saw was that homeschoolers were coming in at the 80th percentile compared to public schoolers averaging nationwide at the 50th percentile, which means homeschoolers are not doing a little bit worse or a lot worse. They're not doing the same. They're not doing 3% better or 13% better. They're doing 30 points better.
Yes.
30 points better. That's extraordinary across the country.
It is absolutely wonderful.
But how does that happen? A public school teacher goes and gets a degree in, well, not history or math, I guess, in teaching. Aren't they supposed to be like the world's greatest teachers? And moms and dads in the country are doing a vastly superior job.
Well, it might also come down to what's motivating the teachers. I mean, with the parents, they really want the best for their children, and they're really involved with their children.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it really depends.
Now, your brother, could you tell me about your brother?
Yes, I have one younger brother. His name's Ben, and he's 13.
Uh-huh.
And he also competes in speech and debate, so.
All right. And so he's good. So he's following in your footsteps.
Yes, and actually we debate together. So.
Ah, very good. What topics do you like to debate?
Well, almost anything, actually. This year we were limited to United States federal government policies with our protectorates.
Wow.
It was very fascinating.
Wow, that's
very
some topic.
Fascinating, yes.
Boy, I'd have to think for a few minutes to figure out what the topic is about.
Yes.
Now, we have a rule for debate on Bob and Yurt Live.
Uh-huh.
It's just one simple rule. If you come on the show to debate, you have to lose.
Oh, boy.
That's it. That's the only that's the only rule we have. No, I'm only kidding. But I think I'd like to raise a topic that you might not have ever considered. But your talk showed how liberals are rewriting history. Historical revisionism is dangerous because mm-hmm. it distorts who you are and where you've come from.
Exactly.
And if you don't know who you are, where you come from, you have no idea where you're headed.
Right.
Which for liberals is hell, pretty much. And they don't know that because they don't know history. They don't understand Christianity is a historical reality.
Exactly.
But I think we conservative Christians have done some historical revisionism of our own. Let me run one by you and get your off-the-cuff reaction.
Okay.
What do conservative Christians say that God thinks about monarchy?
God think about monarchy, huh?
Yeah. What do conservative Christians typically say about whether God would want countries to have a king, to have a monarchy, or not to have a king?
Well, from what I've run across, it seems that most people seem very opposed to the idea of monarchy in
right.
general, and these people are Christians, so.
Right. And any thoughts about what do conservative Christians say that God would think about monarchy, or what has God said about monarchy? Any thoughts about that?
Well, not in particular, because I haven't really studied
right.
that in depth, obviously.
That's all right.
But
Okay. Well, let me run this by you. Typically, our founding fathers pointed to Samuel, some of them. You know, our founding fathers, some of them were tremendous, strong Bible-believing Christians, and others were pagans, pretty much.
Yes.
Thomas Jefferson is essential to understand Thomas Jefferson for our origins, where our country, how it got started. But he wasn't a Christian. He sort of cut up the New Testament and made
right.
his own Bible.
Right, you have to examine the deism to be able to understand him.
Yeah, Thomas Jefferson. But I think George Washington, John Adams, many others were extraordinary Christians. But one of the things that was common to argue back then was that God was against monarchy because remember that Israel demanded a king
mm-hmm.
and they had Samuel as God's prophet and judge and they demanded a king.
And God finally said, I will give you a king.
Yeah. He said, I'll give you a king. And any more of that story that you want? Was God pleased about them asking for a king? Was he annoyed?
Well, from what I remember, I believe that he wasn't that happy about it.
He was very annoyed. He was angry, and he said, this is going to go poorly. And so Christians, conservative Christians, have taken that one story out of 1 Samuel 8, and they've said God in the Bible was very much against the king and monarchy. I think that's revisionist history. And here's why. Because centuries before David and Samuel, God had said that when you get into the land, I will give you a king, and the king must take this Bible and obey the Bible and obey the laws of the Bible. And in fact, God established a king in Israel, and the Messiah would eventually come and sit on the throne of David. And all the prophecies in Scripture that Jesus Christ, that he would be King of Kings and Lord of Lords. So I think sometimes we conservative Christians are a bit guilty of revisionist history, taking that one chapter out of the whole Bible and saying God was against a monarchy, when in reality God had prophesied at the time of Moses, there's going to be a monarchy in Israel. The Messiah will come and sit in the throne of the king. And Jesus Christ, he's not the senator of senators or president of presidents. He's the King of Kings.
Well, we also remember in the New Testament when Jesus finally did arrive that the Jews wanted to take him and make him a king.
They wanted to make him a king, and he knew he came this time to die, right? He came this time to die. And Christians have all different views on end times prophecy and all. But generally, we believe that, we pretty much all Christians agree that at some time Christ will return. And when he returns, he will return as king in his kingdom, not as a president or a representative or a senator. So
right.
I think, Rachel, you know, it's a little mean of me just to ambush you with this thought. But I think we conservative Christians are guilty of revisionist history because we want to defend our form of government. But I think it's a bit improper for us to say God condemned, God was against monarchy. It seems that God wanted to start the monarchy with a man like King David. In a generation earlier, before God was ready, the Jews were demanding a king. And he said, you want a king? All right, I'll give you Saul. Let's see how great that goes. And that was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But can we talk a little bit more about homeschooling? You mentioned different family members who help in the different areas.
Yes.
If they have interest or expertise, then they could help out by teaching a course. How long have you been homeschooled?
I've actually been homeschooled for 6 years now.
6 years. So what grade did you start?
My mom started homeschooling me when I was in fifth grade.
In fifth grade. And the curriculum, if there are people out there wondering, wow, this might be, I've never homeschooled, I never even thought about it. What kind of curriculum do you guys use?
Well, actually, we don't stick with one particular kind of curriculum. My mom actually engages in something that she calls classical education, where she pretty much uses different kinds of curriculums. Mm-hmm. You know, she'll go through all of them and she'll maybe choose this one. But she pretty much just bases different things on the curriculum and then she teaches us off of that. She doesn't just rely on different books.
We've homeschooled for a few years, younger grades and older high school grades.
Mm-hmm.
And we've used a curriculum like Abeka, Christian Liberty Academy, and Alpha Omega. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with any of those?
Yes, I am familiar with those.
Are they okay?
Well, I haven't really studied them in depth, so I really can't give an expert opinion on that.
Yeah, we love them. Our church has so many homeschool families, and so it seems that the quality of the curriculum that's available is so extraordinary.
It is very good. Yes.
It's so good. And as you teach, as a parent, you go through and you're relearning. It's like you're learning life all over again.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wow, did they ever teach me these things years ago?
Well, that's what my mom always has a lot of fun with. Like currently we're going through pre-calculus. We'll meet up with other moms and they're going, you're doing pre-calculus?
Yeah.
Really? And she describes it as, well, but I've been going with them all these years to the different math books. So
right. And so I'm ready for calculus.
Yeah.
So mom has graduated to calculus.
Yep.
That's a trip. That is so neat. That's really exciting. And we have little ones now. Our older ones are mostly graduated or married or having kids. Now we have little ones coming up through the ranks. And we're learning like phonics.
Mm-hmm.
I went to public high school, which was 4 years of review of my grammar school.
Uh-huh.
I learned, as best I can recall, I learned nothing in 4 years of high school. Which is a tragedy. It was a waste of 4 years. And I went to a Catholic grammar school, actually. I'm now the pastor of a Protestant Denver Bible church, but I went to 8 years Catholic grammar school and I learned some things there, but no phonics at all. I didn't learn phonics at all. And so I'm learning how to spell. Thanks to my son Zachary, who's 6 years old. He's sitting in the studio audience right now. Hi, Zachary. Wave hi to Rachel Heflin. Thanks to him, and Michael also is four, I'm learning phonics.
Mm-hmm.
You know phonics?
Yes, I believe I remember studying those.
Yeah, very good. Very good. So, Rachel, tell me again, it's the first weekend in June.
Yes, it is.
Okay, and when you get back to Colorado, your mom's going with you?
My mom and my brother is also going to be competing.
Rachel Heflin, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us. This is Bob and Yart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.
Do right, and don't you stand on